Hi, today is October 11th, 2014, and this is Mobile News Podcast number 99. I'm Taro Gasawara with my good friend John Westfall, with whom I'm no longer angry or mad or envious because my iPhone 6 Plus finally arrived yesterday.
Yes, and you weren't expecting it to arrive that quickly. So.
No.
It was all those inside connections I have with Apple.
There you go.
To get back in your good graces, we got you that device quickly.
Thank you so much, Dr. Westfall. and I should also note, in a fit of rage and jealousy, my iPhone 5 decided that its wake-sleep button would stop working 2 days before my iPhone 6 Plus arrived. So that was a lot of fun. However, it turns out there's a program for that, or not an app, but a replacement program. So I'll put a link in the show notes, in blog notes, I should say, in case anybody else has that problem. My iPhone was out of its 2-year extended warranty, but they took it in and tell me I'm going to get a new iPhone 5, or not a new, but a replacement iPhone 5 sometime.
A new to you. So,
yeah, new to me, right. Mm-hmm. Which unfortunately means I'm going to lose the screen protector, but you know.
And also, if you haven't noticed, every time you get a replacement, I've seen this bug in iOS versions all the way back to 5 that it will remember Apple IDs that have been signed into that physical device. So I've had refurb devices that when it starts up, of course it doesn't have the activation lock, but it has kind of a enter the iCloud password for this account. Well, that's not ever been one of mine. Hit cancel. Next account. Nope, that's not ever been mine. And once those get tied to your Apple account, now whenever I start up any new iOS device and I'm restoring it, not from backup, from backup, I'll get all of those from all the other devices I've ever had. It's kind of like once it thinks you might have this Apple ID, it will ask you about it in infinity.
Indeed. I'm not looking forward to that. In fact, I got that just by, firing up my new 6 Plus. Mm-hmm. And logging in and all that. And it got really confusing, but maybe we'll talk about that another time, because basically I decided to restore from my 5, get all the configuration and all that. But it caused a few problems, like Gmail would receive but not send, things like that. But I was able to fix those things. So in any case, speaking of Apple-ish things, in a couple of days, as from reference of where we speak, on October 16th, Apple's going to announce stuff. Under the tagline, it's been far too long. My prediction, as I think I may have mentioned last week, they're going to introduce shorter power cords. You heard it here first. Because it's been far too long. And actually, the Apple power cords are awfully long, especially the Max with the two-parters.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. Well, but
They just like to make sure that you are able to get power wherever you are at.
Which is, really good, because I've actually had a couple of devices. I think the HP Venue 8 Pro, for example, is a really short cord. It's like 3 feet, meter, 39 inches, whatever, 36, 39 inches long. And it's really short. So I really appreciate Apple's long cords. Don't make them too short, Apple.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
Well, I will make the prediction that is the one that everyone is making, and that is that the Mac Mini will get a refresh.
Well, one can only hope.
Yeah, that it has been far too long for the Mac Mini.
Yeah.
I am really hopeful for new iPads because I've got new iPad money burning a hole in my bank account.
Oh, I wish I could say that.
My last iPad that I picked up it was the original iPad Mini, and it's now 2 years old. And, of course, I've gotten hugely addicted to Touch ID now on my iPhone 6 Plus.
I know what you mean.
So I look at this stupid non-Touch ID iPad Mini, and I go, "You could be better used as an auxiliary device somewhere now that you've had your 2 years of full-time use." So I would be hoping that ideally there would be a new iPad, full-size iPad, a new iPad Air with Retina display and Touch ID, and if I'm lucky, there'll be a new iPad Mini as well.
Yeah, and they're talking about iMacs, right? Also, a refresh of the iMacs.
Yeah, that's another one that's been floating around. So we'll have to see, and you and I will see kind of from afar because I think we're both traveling that day.
Indeed.
So we will be getting the tech updates through good old-fashioned RSS, I believe, and seeing what people are complaining about on Facebook.
Yeah. Now, one thing I don't expect to be announced on the 16th, but I'm wondering about, is the iPod Touch. It was not refreshed along with the iPhone last month, so is it going to die like the iPod Classic?
I'm glad someone's concerned about the iPod Touch. It is kind of one of those devices that is not discussed. It is the device that shall not be named in the Apple table of devices right now. So we shall see. It'll either get a little bit of a nice update, because the last update was not a major refresh for the iPod Touch. But it could also be goodbye iPod Touch. We don't know.
Yeah, and that would be a shame, you know, because as a an old-time user like you of the, the old Pocket PCs that were not even Wi-Fi in its day, you know, I really see some value in a non-carrier-connected mobile device that has Wi-Fi only. And, you know, if you had something like an iPod Touch Plus, you know, in a 6-inch category, almost the size of an iPad Mini, it would be an interesting difference. Of course, at that point, you would say, well, why buy a Mini at 7.9 inches or when you can get an iPod Touch at 6?
I think the...
5.5.
The thing that Apple is pushing toward is, I know a lot of people who, the tech enthusiasts that buy iPod Touches, typically point out that they can use them basically like iPhones with using FaceTime. And I think Apple might be finally saying, okay, well, if you want to do that, then you've got to get an iPad. We're not going to have this, you know, kind of hybrid child between the iPad and the iPhone. It's going to be iPad or iPhone, but not iPod Touch.
Well, I really hope that we'll see maybe an iPad Mini that is, what's the word I'm looking for? Thin enough? I don't know. Something enough so that you could say, hey, you know, the price between this iPad Mini and iPod Touch, if there were a new one, is like minimal. Maybe $50 or something. And iPod Touch is actually kind of expensive when you look at them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I say, well, why don't I just go with the iPad Mini, right? Or maybe a little something a little smaller, maybe 7 inches and 7.9. We'll call it the iPad Nano. Or one without a screen, the iPad Shuffle, I guess. But that doesn't make any sense at all. So. But we'll see.
The iPad Shuffle. You just have to talk to Siri. That's all you could do with it.
Would that be a kick? You know, a plate of... of metal and plastic with no glass that you just talk to and talks back to you.
Siri, what's going on Facebook right now? I don't know.
Okay, and next up is something I've been interested. You and I have both been interested in a long time. Are the various physical sensors for people's what is it called? There's a word for it now. Connected something or other, but any case, the Fitbits and Jawbones and Nike Fuel Bands and all of that. So there is a link in mobilehealthnews.com to a study. I think it's by NPD. This is actually kind of old. It was for January 2013 to January 14, but I'd never seen this, these numbers, which says that in the connected device category, Fitbit had 68% of the market, which I was really surprised to see. In the, I believe it's only the iPhone world. With Jawbone up having 19%, Nike Fuel Band at 10%, and all everything else at 3%. So which one are you using these days, John? I know you have a bunch of stuff.
These days, I had had for a while Fitbits, and then I got the Fitbit Force, which gave me that contact dermatitis.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And ever since that kind of went away, I've been waiting for the next new Fitbit. And they just haven't released anything of any interest since they recalled the Force. So I am the only tracking I am doing these days is just what my iPhone 6 Plus through the motion coprocessor picks up. But I'm hopeful that we're going to see some connected health stuff with the Apple Watch when it finally makes its debut. So that's kind of what I'm holding out for, or a new Fitbit. But right now, I'm not doing as much tracking as I used to. I do have an app on my Pebble Watch that is doing some tracking, but I haven't looked to see how effective it is yet.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of the Fitbit, I seem to recall reading that Fitbit has no intention of interfacing with the Apple Health system. So it's kind of sad that something has, you know, over two-thirds of the market is going to be the one thing that it does not talk to Apple Health. That's quite disappointing to me.
However, it is one thing that... Well, and that is interesting because it interfaces with Microsoft HealthKit.
Yeah.
Not HealthKit, but Health
Vault.
Health Vault, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that, and Google used to have a service that they sunset, and it interfaced with that as well.
Yeah.
So really, like, I use Health Vault to kind of keep some of this data together, but it would be nice to see it on HealthKit, and I guess maybe they just don't at this point see it as something they like to do, or they're planning on having a new cloud platform that would do all of that as well, and they don't want to cannibalize their own platform, or right. It's hard to tell.
Maybe they have one of those business squabbles with Apple, you know, like Apple and Bose and all those sort of things.
Yeah, that one's heating up. You know, now all the Bose products are being removed from Apple stores, and you have Colin Kaepernick wearing Beats headphones in violation of NFL policy, and of course, not saying if Apple/Beats is paying the fine that he is getting, but given that that's been a popular thing in the past with athletes and their respective leagues, going back to Nike paying for Michael Jordan to wear their shoes instead of the official shoes, I wouldn't be surprised if Apple is funneling a little bit of money to rogue superstars.
There you go. Yeah. But you know, though, only thing scarier than an NFL linebacker is an NFL lawyer. So don't mess with them.
It's true.
You could get hurt bad.
Lawyers are very scary at times.
Indeed. Okay, and going back to connected devices, you know, in the non-health category, the same article actually mentioned this, that Chromecast is, the most downloaded connected device in the non-health category, which I found kind of interesting because I wasn't really ever sure how popular it was. I bought two of them, so, you know, I did my bit to increase its popularity.
You've done your good deed. I have not bought any, so you bought one for me,
okay,
too.
Okay, there you go. So I made up for you. Now, one thing that was added in the past week for Chromecast, speaking of it, is the ability to display background content on your television from it. So you can download the new Chromecast app and then set up on the Chromecast things like weather and some news, and to show photos from either collections made available through Google, which are quite nice. I looked at a few of them, as well as your own photos if you want to. So that's kind of neat. You know, personalize the Chromecast when it's in idle mode. I have seen the weather pop up, but I have not seen any news pop up yet. I've only seen the weather and the pictures, but I didn't play with it long enough to, you know, maybe it has to, like, cache something, and I didn't play with it long enough to do that.
Yeah, that reminds me a bit of what the Apple TV does, where the Apple TV will let you pick a gallery in your photos that it will cycle through, which is kind of a nice way to turn it into a giant picture frame when you're not using it.
Yeah. And I guess the mentioning connected device, the most connected device, the dangerous one, connecting to your car, AAA, the American Automobile Association, AAA, did a study of hands-free voice cognitive distraction ratings. And although it was done independently of the other voice-free car systems, Apple Siri had a very high distraction rating, which kind of surprised me. I guess I don't use it enough to car to really notice. I've only used it, you know, a couple of times when I need to make a phone call. But I was a little surprised, and I'm not quite sure. I didn't read the full study. I just read the summary. So I don't know what is it about Siri that is so darn distracting compared to, for example, the Toyota Entune system, which had the lowest level of cognitive distraction, according to AAA studies.
Yeah, I haven't looked at this either, and I suspect it might be the fact that Siri still does require you occasionally look at your screen. You know, it'll say things like, is this correct, or should I send it? You know, here's your message, should I send it?
Right.
And you need to take a quick look at it to see if it got transcribed right. And Toyota and Tune, for all I know, they have a heads-up display or something like that, or they just don't offer some of the things that Siri does. You know, if they have a system that only offers one-tenth of what Siri or Cortana or Google now does, then you can make the argument that, of course, it's not that distracting. You can't do much with it.
Good point. And, you know, I should mention one of the problems I have now, speaking of Siri and my car, is the ProClip, no offense to ProClip, but the ProClip phone clip that I bought for my car for the iPhone 5, with a case on. So they have different ones for a naked iPhone 5 and a one with a case, minus case. So mine expands a bit, but the 6 Plus is so darn wide, it just doesn't fit in the ProClip device, and I'm going to have to find another way to mount my phone. So right now my phone is just sort of sitting in a little compartment in the dashboard with its screen off, with playing podcasts or Audible books or something as I'm driving along. But no maps.
Yeah, yeah, that is the one problem with a new device is I know that my little holder that I have, I don't have anything quite so fancy as a ProClip system, but I do have just this little Android guy that holds my device, and I don't think he is wide enough for the 6 Plus.
Yeah.
So this week coming up when I do some traveling, I think I'm going to have the map display down, you know, kind of in the console and just listening for audible prompts to know where to turn.
Yeah, yeah. You have a long drive, and at least I'm flying to mine, so I don't have those problems. But
of course, I do have a little kickstand on the back of my device, so mm-hmm. I might try using that, putting it on the dash, and seeing if I can secure it somehow onto the dash using, you know, 3M strips or something like that. That might actually work out for me, but. Yeah. We shall see what works this weekend.
Yeah.
At least I have a co-pilot with me who can read the maps. Yeah. So
I need to find something like a GorillaPod or something that somehow attaches to the dashboard somehow and holds these larger devices. You know, I don't know if I'm going to replace my Nexus 4 with whatever the new Nexus is, which I believe is going to be made by Motorola, which is codenamed Shamu, which gives you an idea of how big that thing's going to be. I've been reading 6-inch display, which is half an inch larger than the 6 Plus. So we're talking a big, big, big phone. You know, we're talking true phablet. That's going to be interesting.
And maybe it can swim. If it's named Shamu.
Well, you know, and it'll be...
That would be interesting if that was actually the feature. It's waterproof. It isn't any bigger, you know, it's just Shamu because it can live in the water.
Living in Hawaii, that would be very important. And it's not just the ocean, it's those torrential rains we get every now and then. You know, because as you know, on the Apple side of the thing, they check for water damage before they execute any warranty or other replacement things. So that's pretty important. Mm-hmm. But in any case, yeah, so Shamu, we'll look and see. I don't know if I can deal with two gigantic phones, so we'll, you know, it'll look like I have two shields or something in front of me.
They will fight for your love and attention.
There you go. Okay, now going back the other direction, something little tips we have today. And the first one is truly a little tip, and that is this. I learned, I did not discover this myself, I saw it somewhere in the internet tubes, that if you have Lego minifigs, of which I have many... I have been an old Lego fan. The Lego minifigs have these claw-like hands, essentially, that are used to, you know, hold things like, you know, lightsabers and tools and all kinds of stuff in various scenarios.
Boring things like lightsabers and tools.
Yeah, they are exactly the right size to hold a lightning cable. I'm sure other other cables of that size, too, you know, like a... micro USB cable, anything. Anyway, it fits perfectly into their hands. So if you need something, you just hold up your cable, which is, you know, not an unusual thing. So you don't want cable flopping around loose. Mm-hmm. You want to find it quickly. Go get if you don't have one yourself, go to your kid's toy chest and maybe, you know, appropriate one or order one from Amazon. You know, whatever works for you. I believe I have, who do I have? I have the young Obi-Wan Kenobi minifig holding up my lightning cable right now.
That's a good use for him.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll stay out of trouble.
That's right. You know, and it's also an honorable minifig. So
yes, very.
Not an evil one.
See, I go support evil a little bit more, so I would go for the evil minifig.
I also have a Darth Vader minifig, so maybe I'll do that.
And he should be holding the lightning cable.
There you go. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's more lightning in the dark side than there is on the light. So.
Okay. Now, some good news for Google Voice, well, partially good news, I guess, for Google Voice users is that...
It's still around?
It's still around, although it's disappearing into Google Hangouts slowly. But, you know, if anybody's ever tried to do what I did a while back, for example, is... send movie tickets through Fandango to your phone via text message. It didn't work through Google Voice because Google Voice could not accept MMS. And it didn't even occur to me until it failed that, I got to send it to my real text number, my actual phone number to actually see it. Google Voice added support for MMS, but it's not for all carriers. But if your carrier does support it, and I think T-Mobile and Sprint supports it right now,
everyone in the U.S. but Verizon.
Oh, is that what it is? So, okay. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of evil... No, did I say that? Yes, evil empires. But
yep.
So, okay. So, but you found out something interesting. Even if Verizon doesn't support MMS.
Yeah, if you have Google Voice sending your text messages to email, like I do just for archiving purposes, it will forward the picture message to email. So I got a Google Voice message today that was an MMS message and then a follow-up text message from the same person. Mm-hmm. Their follow-up text message got to my phone, made absolutely no sense because I didn't get the picture. Mm-hmm. And then I got home, and as I was looking at my email, there was the picture and the follow-up text message. So it you can still get pictures. You're just not going to get them as easily as if it were coming through text.
Right, on a support and on a supported network like T-Mobile and Sprint.
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. But that's a big deal, you know, and it's and you know, and people who are perhaps too young or didn't care back when, as recently as I want to say 10 years ago, you could not even send text messages between carriers.
Yep, that is true.
Yeah, you don't send it within, you know, Sprint to Sprint or T-Mobile or AT&T, whatever.
Well, that was a little farther than 10 years ago. It might have been around 15, because I think in 2004 I had no problem texting between carriers. But what is always annoying, and there still is no solution to, is if you don't know someone's carrier, trying to send them a text through the web, if you don't know what their special at message sign is, there is no easy gateway into the text network.
I'll go check on that, because I actually wrote a little article for O'Reilly Media about that years ago, and I don't remember when. But I remember I created a diagram showing which... Because it was just starting to happen where you could send inter-carrier text messages. And I actually had to draw a diagram so I could understand who I could send messages to and who I couldn't. But in any case, there you go. So Google Voice, not dead yet, which I guess is the best we can say about it.
That is good. Well, you know, speaking of things that you don't know details of, so you don't remember exactly when your diagram came out. Mm-hmm. And you can thankfully look that up because it's public blog information. You can probably find that somewhere. One of the things that I've been interested in lately, and my background in psychology kind of predisposes me to this, is, you know, the idea of keeping a private diary or journal. I suppose, technically speaking, if it's private, it's a diary. If it's a public record, it's a journal of some kind. But, of course, diary sounds a little less manly than journal. But real men wouldn't care, so I will just call it a diary.
There you go. Fair enough.
And, you know, about 14... Well, not 14 years ago, about actually 10 years ago, is when I started kind of keeping my blog up to date and trying to blog at least once or twice a month. I figured that was an important thing. And it started very much as kind of a diary slash somewhat public forum. And then over time became a public forum exclusively. And I really haven't had any kind of way to document privately the things that go on in my life. And so I've been thinking in the past few weeks about this. And originally, a couple years ago, I had started using Evernote with a few different tools. So Evernote has this ability to email in your notes with special shorthand. So if you put the at sign in the subject line, you can put the notebook name. It will go straight to that notebook. If you put a crosshatch or a hashtag sign and then the tag, it'll tag it with that when it gets to the email or it gets to Evernote. That's one way to go about it. But the product that I've really grown to like over the last couple weeks is called Day One. And Day One has a client for both macOS and iOS. And they have a few novel things they're doing for those of us that want to remember some things. So their advertising hook that they put in their promo video is just being able to remember details of your life stories. You know, we all remember kind of the story, but we forget some of the details. And as a psychologist, this is actually related to something that we call flashbulb memories, which are these memories that we have that are very vivid, and we think we have details, and then we find out if there's some way to independently corroborate them that the details really aren't right. We think that over and over and over again, we've added and edited these details in. Anyone who's familiar with any of the literature on false memory will know exactly how this kind of occurs. Mm-hmm. So their idea is just, hey, if you write it down when it happens, you don't have to worry about that. So that is one benefit. Another thing that they do is their macOS client will prompt you however often you set it. So I told it every day around 3 o'clock to bother me and ask me to write something. And if you think, well, I don't know what to write, it will actually give you prompts every day and say, you know, what was your favorite game in childhood? Or when was the last time you did this? Or what do you remember most vividly about your college years or something like that? So at least it'll give you a bunch of these different prompts. You can cycle through them randomly. They have I haven't seen any of them repeat yet. So that's kind of an interesting way to go about as well. Do you have any preference on keeping these things? Do you keep paper diaries or journals or anything remotely like that?
I have to say, I keep almost everything in Evernote. I say almost everything because we don't keep these show notes in Evernote anymore.
But yeah, kind of, yeah.
But I keep mostly everything in Evernote. I used to keep a lot of things in, and I'm not going to sniffle and cry, but in SpringPad, which I liked a lot. But I moved all of that stuff over to Evernote because... because SpringPad actually had a nice little migration tool to do that for me. So everything that used to be there is now over in Evernote, including the stuff I already had in Evernote, which was quite voluminous to begin with. So I, you know, I'll write down little bits and pieces. I have, you know, I think we talked about the Evernote, well, it's not from Evernote, but Moleskine notebook, where you just use regular ink and regular, well, yeah, regular paper, essentially, in a paper notebook, and you can write down and draw things or whatever, and then take a snapshot of it with Evernote, and Evernote cleans up the image and deskews it and all that kind of good stuff. And you know, Evernote also does a little bit of OCR, not quite true OCR, but enough to search by text in an image. So I've been using a combination of things like that to capture things. I also used to use LiveScribe for a couple of years until my LiveScribe pen died, and I decided, well, it's not worth buying another one. Although I hear there's a new version that is quite neat, but I'm not willing to spend another $200 on a pen.
Yeah, and I did the same thing where I had used LiveScribe for a while and then decided to kind of just go back to Evernote for most of what I was doing. It would be interesting. Do you know kind of the approximate size of your Evernote corpus at this point?
No, I don't know. It's not as huge as some people. I know, you know, a good friend of ours, Ed, has like thousands of entries, but I think mine is under 1,000.
Okay, I know I have thousands. I have about 6.5 gigabytes of data in Evernote.
Holy cow.
So I definitely, I'm trying to see if there is a way in Evernote to just have it tell you how many notes you have. I know that in notes that start with something other than a letter, so notes that start with a number or a quotation, I have 2,272 notes.
Wow.
But this also is because, you know, kind of the next topic that I had for us to talk about, you know, I look at automation and how to kind of automate my life. And one of the things I do is every time I read something in Pocket, which is what I used to read later, you know, it used to be called Read It Later. I have it send a note to Evernote so that when I'm thinking months later, what was that article I read? It's right in Evernote. It's available for me to kind of search and go, oh, there was the article and there's the link to it. And that's another thing that I've been kind of looking at over the last couple of weeks is these ways or these tips and tools to automate your life. So on macOS, there are things like Hazel, which has gotten a lot of press lately, blog press about its ability to monitor folders. And so if you hook it up to Dropbox and you have it monitor a Dropbox folder, it can automatically launch scripts, clean up folders and things like that. So a lot of iOS devices say, well, you know, if you just kind of put this file in your Dropbox, then you can trigger something on your computer, whether that be sending out a script to do something or locking your computer or whatever it might be. We've talked about IFTTT before, IFT, I guess is how you pronounce that, and all the recipes that you can use for that. And my, you know, I've got all these things, and we can talk much more about them as we see in the next few months, and I plan to incorporate kind of some of my tips of how these work. But it really comes down to finding a happy blend. You will find people all over the place that will say, here are the 800 ways to automate your life, and then you realize that you wouldn't ever use 750 of them. There are just so many things you can do now. My best time-saving trick has always been having what I need when I need it. So having things in Evernote, having things in Dropbox, and being able to, you know, get pretty much any email on my phone. And if I have 5 minutes, I can find what I need from my phone and get it out to that person, which really saves me the time of then having to get back to my office and find it there and leave it in my inbox longer. Do you have any of these automation tips or tricks that you use on a regular basis?
Yeah, and one I'd like to offer is actually kind of a new one, and that's this. up until iOS 8, if you had an iPhone or iPad or other iOS device, you could not really easily clip to Evernote. At least I never knew an easy way to do it. But iOS 8 allows third-party developers to hook into the various save routines in Safari, in email, and things like that.
Share sheets.
Yep, share sheets. So you can now directly save a link from, say, Safari to Evernote, which is, I used to use an Android tablet or phone when I knew I was going to be doing a little bit of mobile reading, because I knew it was such a pain to save it from iOS, but it was really easy from Android. So now I don't have to do that. It doesn't really matter which mobile device I have as long as it's Android or iOS. Now I can clip and save to, and save it in a very specific notebook if you categorize things like I'm sure you do and I do. So that's been a great time saver for me, not having to go say, oh, I need to grab an Android tablet for next, 20 minutes while I read stuff.
Yeah, there are some very cool things that iOS is allowing developers to do. Adding into the share sheets is one of them that we're seeing. The other, there's an app that I downloaded yesterday. Lifehacker ran a little piece on it called Clips. Clips is free for basic, and then $1.99 if you want premium, which is the ability to sync across your devices the clipboard, and also to have a memory of the clipboard. And so it uses that new ability to fit in the today screen or the today notification area. And I haven't used it much yet, but it's the kind of app that wouldn't have existed before iOS 8 because it makes extensive use of the widgets in the today screen. And also a third-party keyboard that can let you, immediately paste in multiple things from your clipboard's history.
Right. Neat. And, one thing I should mention, it's not on our rundown, but one of the things I've been using more than I used to is the Google Docs. And by Google Docs, not the storage, but Google Docs in terms of their documentation tool, which now has a lot of features that it once lacked. It was basically a text editor in old days, but these days it has headers and footers and page numbering and styles like title and, heading one, heading two, that sort of thing. And more importantly, all of these styles transfer over or at least one way. I haven't tried it two ways, but one way over to Microsoft Word. So you can save a Google Docs document with a lot of styles, like I said, headers and footers and heading levels and all that. And it'll go to Microsoft Word just fine. And that's become more important because more and more I've been starting a lot of my writing online. So I don't have to, try to remember where I put that file. Yeah. At least this is not sensitive information, at least, kind of a confidential document or something. But if I, it's just a kind of, I don't really care if somebody ever finds it kind of thing. I've been doing that more and more. And I have to say, I used to use, or I tried to use Microsoft's OneDrive, Office for the web kind of thing. But I have had so many issues over the years, including recently, where Office for the web did not save, like many paragraphs of information in a timely fashion. And I had some kind of network glitch that caused me to lose, like maybe 20, 30 minutes of work that I gave up on it. Yeah, so that's, so if I will move things to OneDrive, like a Word thing, and if I want to take a look at it. But if I'm going to do live editing, live writing, I'm going to use Google Docs from now on. It's been working out quite well.
I think Google is building a much better solution than Microsoft and perhaps even Apple. Apple's iOS, or not iOS, but their web versions of iCloud, the iWork suite, are nowhere near being ready for prime time yet. No. And Microsoft has just, in theory they should have the best, but they just have kind of this lack of coherency that Google Docs does have.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also slow. OneDrive, if you try to, at least for me, and I've tried it from different network locations, not just my home and not just my office, but downloading a large file from OneDrive is just an exercise in frustration, because it just takes so long, much longer than you expect given whatever megabits per second you're supposed to be getting at your particular location. Whereas Google Drive is just boom, whatever your network speed is, okay, we're downloading at that speed.
Yeah, and I the other thing that I used Google Docs for, and this was actually something with Sheets, and I actually think that they've changed this a little bit, but you wouldn't think of it until you'd go to use it, is I would have students turn in data from little exercises they would do, mm-hmm. and use one of the forms that you can create with Google Sheets, which right. is such a nice feature that it can have for an impromptu web form. But then the very cool thing about it was that there was a way, and I believe Google may have changed this or deprecated it. I'm kind of looking to see right now. But there is a way to share it out or publish it to the web as a any kind of format you want it. So you could do, oh yeah, you can still do it. So you and I have both used R in right. our work. Right. You can take a Google spreadsheet, publish it as CSV, and have one link so that in your R script, you can immediately just pull that link, get the CSV file straight from those web forms.
Really? So the CSV is in Google Drive?
No, it's basically a dynamic sort of deal where you basically publish this link right. that, and you tell Google, I want this to be a CSV version of this particular sheet,
right.
You know, form responses,
right.
and it will give you a URL,
huh.
which looks a lot like the URL for right. when you share a Google Doc.
Right.
But at the end of it, you know, it's got output equals CSV,
right.
and it will give it to you straight in CSV that you can suck oh. right down into an R script.
So it's kind of like RSS for data.
Yes, exactly, which is yeah. really cool if you're, you know, analyzing responses from a survey or analyzing just things that you wow. you would otherwise have people, you know, sending you that data. So
yeah.
there are some really cool things you can do. And, of course, there's a huge ability to use script editors with Google Sheets and do some really neat stuff. I've seen people build server monitoring systems with Google Sheets and everything else, taking advantage of the time triggers
right.
that Google has built in. So we could do a whole podcast every week on the cool stuff you can do with Google Docs and Google Sheets.
We should sometime. Because I didn't know about that at all. So thanks for the tip. That's very useful mm-hmm. to me, actually. Okay, and finally, we have a Conspiracy Corner item from the Wall Street Journal, you know, home of conspiracy stories. at least in the finance world. So this one is about iRobot, which is the parent company of that makes the Roomba. Now, you know, I think they got it kind of wrong. They say, you know, iRobot Corp, best known for making Roomba. This is true, but they mm-hmm. make it seem as if Roomba was the origination of the company. And I believe iRobot, you know, was making robots for police and defense work long before they made the Roomba. So, you know, I think the Roomba commercial stuff for consumers came out long after they had made quite a name for themselves for other kinds of hardened systems.
That would probably be what they're best known for, though.
Yeah, yeah. But in any case, they now have more smarter. Yeah, that's really smart. Okay, they have smarter robots that can deal with, you know, more challenging terrain all by themselves mm-hmm. without a human directing them. So they're using inertial sensors and, you know, magnetic compasses and GPS and all that kind of stuff to move around and do some, you know, I guess what you would call thinking from an AI point of view. AI kind of thinking. We're not saying they are self-aware or anything, although you can never tell. and, you know, hence why it's in Conspiracy Corner. And, of course, you know, although Google has pulled out from some of these contests that DARPA's running for AI robotics stuff, we all know that Google equals Skynet. So they're looking very closely at this, and the Terminator is not far off.
Well, all I can say about that is I, for one, welcome our new cleaning robot overlords.
That's right. You know,
I would live in a world where they would keep things clean.
I bought a Roomba for my mom. I should say my sister and I bought a Roomba for my mom for a birthday gift or something a number of years ago. She loves that thing.
Yeah, we have one over here that actually needs a new battery, but other than that, it's a pretty fun little device to have around. And
useful.
Yep. Keeps and things useful. Somewhat clean, you know, scares the cat. Animals can ride on top of it.
That's right. And there are a lot of YouTube videos to prove that.
Yes, very true.
Yeah. Okay, then. So that's all I've got, John. You got anything else you want to add?
Other than just trying to stay sane as you know, a technologist in this world of all these changing things, I'm doing at least the best I can. I'm hopeful that Apple will give me some goodies that I might be able to buy this week. But I still want that Apple Watch. I'm kind of angry that I might have to wait until February or March for that is the latest rumor I heard. So.
Well, I am more excited about what the possible iPad new versions will be on October 16th because as I've mentioned many, many times, probably far too many times, like you, I have the first generation iPad mini. And so I'm kind of not super, you know, it's still running fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not in a big hurry to replace it. But I also have an iPad 2, which is the only full-size iPad I have, or the newest iPad full-size I have. So I'm kind of thinking about replacing it. There's sometimes where a full-size iPad is nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's not too expensive. And I definitely want something with a, you know, Touch ID sensor.
Yeah.
Because like you, I am now spoiled.
Yes, and I'm also spoiled that I went with a storage upgrade on the last one. So now I'm probably going to think 32 or 64 is the only way to go. These 16 gigabyte devices are just killing me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually went with 64 gigs and iPad 2 by accident. I really wanted a 32, but that's all they had. So that's what I bought when it came out. But actually, it turns out to be a good thing because I've used up a lot of that storage.
Yep, yep. It doesn't take much effort on an Apple device to do that.
Yeah, and it's
oddly, a lot of cool stuff to download.
It's mostly apps. Apps take up most of my storage space. It is not music and videos and things you would kind of think would take up space. What I was telling people, you know, why you should buy a bigger device back in the old days, I said media, but I was totally wrong, at least for me.
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, this has been Mobile Views Podcast number 99. Number 100 will be at least 2 weeks away because, as John mentioned earlier, we are both traveling to separate parts of the country. So
we are planning big things for 100.
That's right. Maybe fireworks. We'll see. You know, flyover by F-16s. I don't know. We'll see what we can arrange.
Unfortunately, it will just be over where we physically are, so you'll have to take our word
for it. That's right. Nowhere else. Just... And that's it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just say, oh, there they were.
Yeah.
And you'll know that we paid big bucks for that.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a drone. You know, we'll get a little drone to do a flyover for us.
Only if it's delivering something.
That's right. Okay, MobileViews 99 is done. We will see you in 2 weeks, not 1 week. And maybe we'll have a guest after that. We'll see. Talk to you all later.